You're good.
Okay. All right. So I call the October 16, 2018 regular board meeting of Glen Cove Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Right. 7:01. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden's absent. Commissioner Underdunk?
Here.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay, on to consent agenda items. A through E are routine recommended motion. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items? Okay, no, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote, please, Lisa.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion passed. It's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. Is anybody here interested in making any 3 minute comment? Okay, very good.
Mayors of public, no one?
Okay. No one? Okay. Financial report. We have 7 months of the fiscal year complete.
Yes, I would just like to highlight a couple of things in the report. Number one, you'll notice obviously with the daycare expansion, expanded revenues and expenses. We're kind of right in line right now. September really was the first month, and I know there were a couple of past due amounts that Jess and her staff followed up with after the beginning of the new month. So probably look to probably gain in that area. The beach and boating department, I kind of want to explain a little bit. If you see with the boating department, we did reallocate and budgeted accordingly to move some of our maintenance, parks department salaries or wages that were previously in the beach department to the boathouse to act more accurately represent a true representation of what it's taking to run that facility. So you will see, compared to previous years, the boathouse showed more to deficit. It's because we're more accurately reporting expenditures in that department. Also, if you look up in the recreation programs, just wanted to mention Bobby remembered, had a good memory too. The supplies for last year are definitely much lower than what is showing for this current year. There was a miscoding last year, and in the budget process, it was discovered and it was corrected. They were going to basically a reduction of supply expense versus the revenue. So you will see in later months where that's going to be more representative from year to year as a comparison.
All right, thank you, Carol. Okay, so I would like to now introduce from the group that met here in Glencoe, the engaged Heather Shady. Is that correct pronunciation? I've only known you as Heather. From the Active Transportation Alliance. It's so weird, people only have first names in so many contexts. And of course, Adam Hall from the Village of Glencoe to do a little presentation for us on the wrap-up of the process where the community met with the village agencies to discuss transportation. So,
thank you for coming.
I have a very short presentation. I'll keep this as brief as possible. Just a lot to share the presentation done by Heather. So this is really the culmination of a year-long process, working in partnership with the village, the park district, and the school district on an active transportation plan for Glencoe. The active transportation plan is a detailed action plan for biking and walking infrastructure improvements, as well as educational campaigns and encouragement campaigns to really spur active transportation in the village. The study cost was $20,300, and it was the cost to share between the three agencies. And really what it does is improves safe connections, improves access, there's an extensive public engagement process, and formulated some recommendations which are being presented to all three organization boards, and the village's presentation will be on Thursday of this week. In October 2017, we convened a steering committee It had members from the village, the park district, the school district, Director Shepherd, park presidents Lisa Brooks, and park commissioner Josh Lutton, and Director of Facilities Bob Collins served as representatives from the park district on that steering committee. We had extensive public engagement throughout the process, and culminated in the final community open house presented by in October. The support and funding behind the active transportation plan was throughout the community. We applied for a grant application for the project. Unfortunately, we turned down. So really what we did was we turned towards reducing the cost of the study while retaining important components and elements of the plan. Important components to every organization, including particular safe routes to parks and schools portion of the active transportation plan. What this plan does is it continues to sustain ongoing initiatives from various organizations for the park district to advance the zero master plan, which includes recommendations to complete sidewalks and trail improvements, to increase connectivity to parks and trails throughout the village and into the surrounding region. And really it results in more efficient capital planning from the village's perspective, working in coordination with other organizations for sharing of where infrastructure should go, as well as educating the community on infrastructure improvements and connectivity that can be made. And we continue to foster the government cooperation partnership. I can't stress that enough. This project has been a pleasure to work with the park district on, as well as the school district on. And really, I understand this community that fostering the government cooperation is incredibly important to residents of this community. So I really thank you for engaging with us on this project going forward. And as always, moving forward. We have planning workshops available and open to all residents throughout the process. We have a survey that went out, both a community-wide survey as well as a parent survey that went out to school parents. And what we did was we formulated a map of community-wide network recommendations from that outreach to community. And we developed a project list and implementation matrix and have a little more into the recommendations as she goes through her presentation. So with that, I'd like to introduce Heather Sheehan from the Active Transportation Alliance. She's going to be a consultant for the local building park district and school district on this project. And again, I'd like to thank you for partnering with us on this issue.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to get that next slide.
After my report, I'm going to bring the cool mouse by Miss Black and do it. The cool mouse by Miss Black is taking a picture of all the board members.
Alderman
McIntyre.
Yes. Alderman
Jones. Yes. I don't know if you can help too.
Okay.
We're sent through all the young people at it.
Here.
There you go. Okay. Don't help me. Yep, and then we got exactly. How'd you know? I am no help. Oh, it's gone. Oops. There we go.
Impacts the park. tonight, and I will try to keep it short, since I know that we have a lot on your agenda. So this is kind of the structure of the plan. There's an intro chapter, existing conditions, recommendations, and an implementation chapter, and I'll talk a little bit more in depth about it. So starting with the intro chapter, three kind of components of that chapter are one, why the implementation matters, the implementation vision in that chapter, and also discuss the process. So I know that I've heard from a lot of people in Monaco that they kind of know these concepts already. There's a lot of reasons why walking and biking is important to the community. Everything from health, we know that there are fewer people getting more physical activity than ever in our country, and making a community that's safe and accessible for people to walk and bike really gives them that opportunity to build in walk and bike into their everyday lives and get more exercise. There's a safety component. So streets that are designed, especially with pedestrian first mentality, are safer for everybody. And they actually reduce pressure for drivers as well as pedestrians and cyclists. There's a connectivity component to this, making sure that you're connecting your network to others and making sure that some kind of a regional active transportation element really helps facilitate more use. Economic development issues. We know that people who walk or bike to local stores actually spend more dollars over the course of a year than those that drive. While they might not spend as much each trip, they make more frequent trips and spend more money as a result. So those are just some of the reasons, but there's of course many, many more. So Lanco's vision has been developed in partnership with the steering committee of sustainability task force members. But I'll read it out to you. Imagine Lanco where people of all ages are encouraged to walk and bike to as many amenities. If streets and sidewalks are back to children each day on routes to schools and parks. If downtown bustles with activity, people track teams and linger. If playground bike racks are filled, there are full on summer days and the trails burst with walkers and runners expected of all ages and abilities. There's also a very long mission statement, and I'm sorry for the wall of text on these two slides. But the purpose of this is really acknowledge that Welcome does have a great walking bike network, and it's not accessible to everyone with all ages and abilities. So the mission that was developed was walking and biking are only one mode of transportation for people of all ages, but Glencoe residents united have complete access to all active transportation options. By working together to build a consistent network of sidewalks, bike facilities, safe crossings, and increasing awareness of transportation options, the partner can provide the tools necessary to reach our vision and derive the many benefits of a walking and biking friendly community. So the plan also includes different actions and strategies that can be taken to advance the mission and the vision. Things like building a comprehensive network of sidewalks that are in repair, creating a network of bikes that connect to local destinations and link to the other regions, create a safe crossing for pedestrians and cyclists, and develop a community-wide campaign to promote walking and biking out of action. And then some strategies that are included in the plan. Creating safe schools, improving walking and biking access to parks, and building and maintaining a network of complete streets. So, those are the three different things you can consider. So, we're planning to follow a very standard planning process, and Adam talked a little bit about this in his presentation already. We started by forming a steering committee that was made up of many representatives across the village, including residents. This group really focused on making sure that goals and priorities were set for the project and set a lot of the recommendations, review them, and helped us really craft every component of the plan. They also reviewed existing conditions, so we did everything from walking. I walked pretty much every street in the village, I think. It was snowing for a lot of it, so it wasn't pleasant, but I got through it. We toured the grounds of the different school buildings and also some of the park district facilities as well, and looked at the arrival and dismissal time at the three schools here. We had a lot of available data sets that are out there, other crash data, different set data from the Illinois Department of Transportation to understand what the existing conditions are in the roadway are. So that's all included in the second chapter of the plan. As I mentioned, we also really the best we could to try to engage the community in multiple ways, including online and in person. We hosted a public meeting in April that had about 40, maybe 50 people attend, where people actually got down to ground mats. We had an online survey where people could do the same and also respond to questionnaires. We surveyed parents, and we tabled a few community events as well. So we tried to reach people from multiple places. Finally, the next step is to develop recommendations, which we'll talk about tonight. And then finally, the goal of this project is to both accept the plan and to implement it in the future. So even though this project is ending, it'll still continue on as all the agencies work together to figure out how to move forward. So for existing conditions, we'll talk a little bit about some of the components of that. Starting with surface areas, so one of the things I looked at is walking distance to some of the more popular things here in Glenbrook, Pumpkin Gorge, and Park. So from your comprehensive plan for the park system, I learned that more than 67% of residents live within a half mile of the park, which is pretty incredible. That's a much better number than we see in a lot of places where people have really good access. And if you look at kind of a little bit further into the details, people can walk to, depending on where you live, you're closer to some parks than others. So, here in the darker green areas, you might be a 5-minute walk or a 5-minute bike ride from Tegas or the Lincoln Park or Ross Park. And as you get further out, that distance increases, of course. We also, I'll just point out that I think it's no surprise to anyone that residents did say that Tegas can be really difficult to access by walking and biking, especially if you have to cross Green Bay Road or Maple Hill. We also looked at the sidewalk numbers here in Glencoe. My organization really, again, supports a kind of pedestrian-first mentality, so we really want to make sure that all places are safe for pedestrians to walk. So here in Glencoe, you have a really pretty solid sidewalk network, about 70 miles throughout the village, but there are intermittent gaps where one side might not have a sidewalk. And there's also communities that just have no sidewalk whatsoever, like Cook Ridge. And so these can be barriers to people who are trying to get around. There's also several bikeways here in Glencoe, and I'm surprised. We heard a lot from residents and members of the steering committee that there's really great north-south access by Sheridan Road, the Green Bay Trail, and the North Branch Trail. But east-west connections are much more difficult and not really available. So people were really looking for where those opportunities could be to make east-west connections. Later in the presentation, I'll show a map of walking routes to the Tegas Center and Lakefront Park. But one of the things that fed into those recommendations was looking at where traffic control devices exist in the village. So this is either traffic signals or stop signs or push buttons for flashers. So we asked, this is a little overview from the survey data we collected. So one of the things that we asked residents to respond to was how often do you walk or bike to work? And we asked in a typical month with nice weather. So it isn't in January, probably, but maybe July. So about almost 40% of people told us that they walk weekly to the parks that responded to the survey, and that was about 200 respondents. 17.5% said daily, 27.5% said never, and 17.5% said seldomly. So you've got a pretty good number of people who are either daily or weekly using the park system and walking or riding their bikes to, at least from our survey, respondents. In the survey, we also asked people to respond to a question about what their top priorities were to be improved. And we got a lot of comments in particular about the Tegas Center on the survey, so I thought I'd share some of those comments with you. One was that the grass hill near Maple Hill and Green Bay Road obstructs drivers using pedestrians, so that's over there. I think I'm oriented correctly there. Okay, sorry. We also heard pedestrians can't tell when the flashing light at Green Bay Road but that causes confusion, and we've also heard from drivers that they're kind of confused about what to do when the lights are flashing. We also heard that sometimes driving configurations take a center lane, so crossing is very difficult for pedestrians. So we have a driveway right here, and then the signal to cross right here. So they're pretty close together, but they're middle line. Another one that this is harder to kind of control, but we heard that drivers can't see cyclists in the morning around the curb here due to the morning sun kind of obscuring their vision. We also heard just generally the safe center being perfect parking, but I know that you're working on. Have you
done it? We did. Just going to get, we have to get the bike racks in, which will be later this month. Yep.
Perfect. So you're already implementing your plan. Good stuff. And we also heard about needing a program for the early childhood entrance adjacent to a crosswalk. So those are some specific things you heard about in the center. Just from other general park comments, we heard that, again, more bike racks. The Lakefront Park is another area that people would like to see more bike parking to get back to the beach in the summer and put their bikes there. We heard that Old Elm, so the Old Elm neighborhood is another one of those sidewalk path neighborhoods. So someone asked if there's potential for the district and village to partner, maybe to create a sidewalk, better sidewalk access to the playground that's going in the future. And we also heard that at Milton Park, it's difficult to cross Dundee Road. I think when a lot of people, like throughout the survey, said Dundee Road is a barrier for them. And we heard this especially about West Bowl as well. So for a bigger picture, that's kind of micro level. This is an overall summary of the comments we got from the community about walking on the left and biking on the right. So the bigger the red dots are, the more points we got on the map and mentions we got in the survey. And it's harder to see on this presentation, but there are lines on some of the roadways too where we got a lot of responses. So again, some of the bigger areas you heard about were along Dundee Road, at the ticket center, those two crossings in Maple and Mount Vernon, and then along Green Bay Road as well. So I'll go to the recommendations now. One of the things to know again about kind of the active transportation philosophy is that it's not just about building infrastructure, but it's also about building a culture of walking and biking, which is through education and encouragement as well. I'll focus a little bit more on the education and encouragement things, because that's something that Park District can specialize in, but also maybe some of our organizations for infrastructure. So some of the things that are recommended in the plan are to offer a variety of educational opportunities for people of all ages. Everything from learn to ride classes for adults. Believe it or not, there are some adults who never did learn how to ride a bike and are looking for a place to do that in their community. A park district can be a place that offers such a class. On a broader level, bike maintenance classes can also be a really valuable service that the park district offers for people. You know, sometimes I can't tell you how many times I've heard from someone that they got that tire on their bike and just left it in their garage and never rode it again. And so just knowing how to fix the glass, knowing how to put your tape back on, can really help keep going.
That's her.
Another great thing to do, we heard a lot about, especially people being concerned that kids sometimes aren't wearing helmets when they're riding their bike, or adults when they're riding with their children. So just offering any information about proper helmet fitting and how to wear your helmet can be really useful, and just a constant reminder to people that they should do the right thing, even if they don't really want to. And then the final thing that you can do as a park district is continue to educate your users about the benefits of walking and biking. So this could be, you know, in your communications with your members to let them know, did you know you bike to the park today? We're having this event, bike to the beach. Things like that, just kind of subtle reminders that this is an option. You don't have to drive if you want to. So for in-person activities, I know you're already doing things together with the school district and the village, such as the summer safety and bike rodeo. Another thing that we talk about is here in the community is we continue to host, or we host a community-wide active transportation challenge. So this could be, you know, a challenge to the residents of Glen Cove, saying, let's spend the next month or year logging this number, this many miles, foot and by bike as we can, and just kind of put it out there to them. There's a famous study, there's a famous case from Oklahoma City where the mayor challenged everybody to collectively go on a diet and lose 1 million pounds, and the city did it. But just by having that official kind of thing to ask and get people active in doing it, made it happen. Again, this is similar to the education slide earlier, but just encouraging people to walk and bike to and from the park. You can even make it a special day if you want. This is similar to, say, from the school. I know the school district has a bike to school day. The parks could do something similar on a specific day of the week or month. And then also on the right, we developed a walking route map that we put into the school district. There's also one from the Pacific Center and one for the Lakefront Park. So you can hand out to the community to, again, let people know that these are routes that are easier to use. We'll get into some of the infrastructure recommendations. Some of the things to know about sidewalks, as I mentioned, in an ideal world, every place would have a sidewalk everywhere. We know there are challenges to that, the progressive right-of-way acquisition, tearing up trees, having the proper grades, just kind of anything, you name it. But the plan does call for the village to continue to work with residents to figure out solutions to having sidewalks everywhere. In addition to that, the plan provides recommendations for the village to continue to repair sidewalks that are crumbling, cracked, starting to lift up, acting as a tripping hazard. So the map on the left actually shows an analysis of the data that the village has been collecting about sidewalk conditions and shows kind of an average score based on what they've collected so far. So they'll continue to collect this data over time, and we have a process for them to update this map as well. In addition to installing sidewalks, there's recommendations for making the pedestrian environment better. Things like properly maintaining shrubs. I know we've heard a lot about shrubbery kind of falling into the sidewalk, taking up half of it, blocking sight lines, especially along the three-way trail. So that's just something that the village can continue to support and promote throughout the community. And this is actually the top picture of the slide from, or picture from a blog post that the village manager wrote a couple of months ago about it. We also recommend putting in school crossing pavement markings. And while this isn't a park-specific recommendation, it can help calm traffic around some of the parks, so having big markings that say school crossings, whatnot. And specifically, we have these recommended for Dundee Road and Green Bay Road. The plan includes recommendations for about 30 intersections as well. Everything from installing crosswalks to tightening up corners to looking at opportunities for pedestrian crossings. So some of the things that are recommended are at Sycamore and Forest Way. Bumping out or installing curb ramps to create a better crossing near the park. And figuring out, the village is also looking for a standard for pedestrian crossing signs. So at every crossing location, that's either school route or a park route, there will be enhanced signage that call out that this is a pedestrian crossing or this is a school crossing. But something more visible, like that bike sign on the right, sorry, the top. And this is more of a park recommendation, but in a few places there are areas, the corners that were just too small for kids for laying across the street, especially at Dundee Road and at the Dawson and Green Bay crossing. So the plan recommends making a bigger crossing area so students can wait without kind of falling into traffic. We have a few other recommendations, such as taking the train radii at Green Bay Road and Wesley. The picture on the bottom left kind of shows what that could look like. So if you have a really nice wide turn, you can take that really fast. if you plan enough to make it more square, drivers will take it much more slowly and make it safer for people who are trying to get across the street. At Green Bay and Linden, at the Green Bay Trail, there's a lot of recommendations that we'll talk about in a minute, but one of the specific ones is to put bump outs, so actually to bump out the intersections at Hazel and Park to shorten the crossing and make people who are trying to cross there more visible. And then there's another recommendation that will explore an opportunity to raise the crosswalks, so actually bring them up to the sidewalk level at Vernon and Hazel and at Vernon and Jefferson. And what that does is it acts as a traffic calming mechanism at those major crossings. Those are both school crossings where you can park your school.
What kind of bump outs?
So, I'll show you in this picture.
So you see how the curb goes out in the street a little bit here? So rather than being flush with the intersection, it actually goes out. So it's just basically taking the intersection and narrowing it a bit. And it's often done if there's a parking area. So it shortens pedestrian crossing and also makes pedestrian car visible to drivers who are crossing there. So some other things with intersections, we heard from a lot of cyclists that there's certain signals that they wait and wait and wait and don't trigger the signal on the car doesn't come. So along Green Bay Road, that happens also at Sheridan. So you can actually install a probability detector here. And there's sensors in each of these stripes that will detect bike wheels and tell trigger the signal. At Sheridan and by the Lakefront Park, there was really old traffic signal that doesn't have any kind of information for pedestrians. So Zach has upgraded that can include countdown information in the future, so it'll actually tell pedestrians how much time they have left to cross the street. At Paper Center, one opportunity that I think is feasible for improving the Vernon crossing is what's called a rectangular rapid flash of beacons. So that's solar powered. It's pretty inexpensive compared to a traffic signal. And what you do is you push a button if you're there to cross the street as a pedestrian. It'll light up down here. So there's a sequence of lights that flash on and off to show drivers that you're there to cross. And there's about a 95% success rate and compliance rate with those signals. It's been looked at and they're very effective. Finally, at the Green Bay Trail, we recommend it basically at every grade crossing, so everywhere the trail crosses the street, to include bicycle crosswalks as well. They can be in green parking or in standard white. That will allow the crosswalk to be more and provide a separate space for pedestrians and cyclists to get across the street. So it'll be a little bit easier for everybody. So the plan also includes a network of bikeways on the local streets that provide options for people to get around. In particular, we've heard some of the more popular routes include Grove and Vernon, which is pretty much all the way north. Routes that get you to the Green Bay Trail from the neighborhoods east of Green Bay Road. So this network really just provides more options for people in that. This doesn't suggest bike lanes on every street because most of the streets we went for are too narrow. But what we do suggest is on most of the streets that are marked in pink, what are called marked turf lanes. And those are used as a reminder to drivers that cyclists might be on these roads and will help kind of create more awareness for everybody. So I'll talk a little bit about implementation. This is a really small talk. But the plan does include an implementation framework. For the education and encouragement recommendations, our suggestion is to really start thinking about that now within the next year or so and figure out kind of the next steps that you'd like to pursue and roll out plan for implementing them. So we recommend that the Park District and School District continue to meet maybe not monthly, but more regularly to discuss these items and develop their plans.
Just some other best practices for implementation. Again, partnership is the key theme tonight. So continue to do that and make sure that you're working with other agencies, but also your residents can move this hand forward. It's only successful if everybody's in support of what's happening. We also recommend that the village establish a system for vetting and approving projects that implement impact roads so that their decision making becomes easier as time goes on. We recommend for every project that you do to measure your kind of evaluate project. So it doesn't have to be an extensive process, but just understanding what the impact on the community is. Has it increased, it decreases, is traffic improved, gotten worse, just to understand where you're at. And then also to continue to seek out grant funding. So one of the reasons why we always recommend that communities have plans is that it really does help you become more competitive in federal grant funding processes. So the Illinois Department of Transportation will look at your grant application and say, is this a part of a community approved plan? Yes, you'll be more likely to get funded for a grant than otherwise. So you're already on your way to getting more money, hopefully.
Yeah, Heather, thank you very much. I really enjoyed the process myself, participating in the meetings and things. But I've noticed lately that one of your colleagues is interviewed often in local media whenever there's an issue regarding bikes, which there are a lot of issues about bikes and biking and walking. So I've seen your organization now frequently in the news, so that's interesting. I guess I will open it up to the board if anyone on the board has any specific question or comment they'd like to make about the presentation. Yes, Dudley.
Okay, yes. I think it's terrific that you're taking a look at biking and walking in the community. It's really important, I think, for both active living and healthful living. So it's really a good thing. One of the things I wanted to take a special look at would be how our system integrates with our neighbors. Highland Park has been doing a lot of work on their system. There's some talk at the Botanic Garden about trying to figure out how to get from the Botanic Garden to the a bikeway underneath the power lines without going on the Crook Road, which is pretty scary. And then also how to get from Glencoe over to the Forest Preserve in a safe way, or even beyond. You can see probably now I'm a big biker, and I'm scared when every time I go over the Denby Bridge.
Yeah, I
agree.
It's terrible. So
maybe you could do a map that shows how that kind of fits into the region.
Yeah, so. A lot of different things. kind of all the things that we're going to see are also like really complicated ones. I guess that's why I don't need to try to fix them yet.
Quick question, Heather. How does something like that get done? I mean, okay, now we've got this great idea. And we need some other people to cooperate. What happens next?
So the next step is to reach out to the agencies that you want to work with and start to kind of feel them out for how the process works. The Forest Preserve District, I think, is generally easier to work with, and they're pretty cooperative when you talk to them, they want to improve access to your trail system. So they're usually pretty happy to apply to that, and it just involves contacting them and trying to just work through what is allowed, what isn't, and who's paying for it. With IDOT, it'll depend on a number of things. So if they're at any point redoing Forest Way, if that's coming up in their multi-year plan, then I would say that's the opportunity to talk to them and let them know that you have a plan to fix this thing and do these things.
I just agreed to it last month.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say.
So then, since it says that it would probably be 20 years before they touch again. So if that's the case, then it has to be kind of from a local request, and usually you might be able to apply for grant money from IDOT to make improvements, or if they were going to fix it, or then they'll start to cooperate with you on it. But with everything, it's sending a letter or contacting the right person and kind of working through it. There's no secret, unfortunately, getting things done quickly.
Yes.
Heather, I want to thank you and Adam also, of course, leadership and this is really fun to participate in. So thank you for that. Absolutely. And thanks to Lisa and Lisa and others for participating in it as well. Lisa Shepherd, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with any of your, with Catherine or Phil about their sort of
No, we haven't gone to detail yet, and if this is, we look at it as a long-term plan, and so we haven't really had discussions yet, how we're, you know, ideas for implementation yet, so.
Well, from my perspective, as a community member and as a board member, I encourage you to reach out to them and maybe over the next few months start to take those first steps. And seems like a lot of great work has been done here. Unfortunately, I think the nature of these things is there's a lot of priorities, there's a lot of coordination that has to happen, so there is a risk that it becomes a nice, you know, desk decoration or shelf decoration as opposed to something that we actually implement. So.
As Heather said, this is it's already put into a long-term plan of organizing things together. It's not one and done, that we're going to have ongoing meetings on this. And next month we plan to accept the plan, and then we move forward on looking how we can implement certain things and which organization will take those on. And a lot of us already have started some of the things to implement, so that will continue.
I understand that the Active Transportation Committee's role is now finished, so it's really up to
right. Organizations.
Organizations, yep. To sort of self-lead that.
Right, and that, yeah. Heather said that's all built in the plan, so, yeah. Yep.
And from the village perspective, I've been assigned by the village manager as part of the strategic work plan to continue to advance the active transportation plan and implement the recommendations. So from the village's perspective, I will remain in close contact with Lisa Catherine to talk about where we should start to program in infrastructure improvements, encouragement campaigns, and education campaigns, to make sure we're all seeing, talking out of the same mouth and trying to implement this plan. I assure you, I know the fear is that we'll go on a shelf. I can assure you that if that happens, I haven't failed. So I hope that does not happen, and I will strive to make sure that it does not happen. So from my perspective, that's where I've been here.
Okay, just one more quick recommendation for the Park District. I would like to see a link on our website developed over time that shows, as a starting point, a map like that, a place that people can go to find trails. So not just within, for the Green Bay Trail, certainly access points, because I think it takes people a long time to learn where those are, and just trails in the general area that if you have an hour or 4 hours, or you can ride 4 miles or something, you can find encouraging information about where to go to access these trails. And there's a lot of them, but you almost have to know someone who knows where they are. And I think the Park District could be a very good resource, and it would also drive traffic to our site, and they could pick up all kinds of other interesting tidbits when they came to our site to get this information. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a clearinghouse, a place to go to find these things.
Yeah, there really isn't. So every agency and organization that builds trails has their own system map, and they don't show how they integrate. So I know we talked about this, but every few years or so develop a publishing of a landing map that shows where all the trails are in the county region around the city of Chicago. And I'm actually starting to update that map next month, and so I can share the data with you once it's complete, which could be put on the website, integrated with Google Maps or some other systems. So happy to do that.
Good.
Excellent. Sure. Thank you.
We will follow up on that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Heather.
Yes, thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming out. We appreciate it.
We're going to move on to a review of the 2019 health insurance renewal. Carol Menzinger will review insurance renewal detail and answer any of our questions. Go ahead, Carol.
So each year we meet as the Panorama Health Council to approve the new rates and plans available for membership. And it's, as we've talked in the past, being a part of the Panorama pool really allows us to be not just one group of 35 employees, but one group of 2,000 employees and over 4,000 covered lives. So really it minimizes some of the high exposure if we do get certain high dollar claims. So in July of last year, we did approve to go for another 3-year contract. So within Panorama, we have the ability to change plans. The good news is that for 2019, the increase is 2.17%. Because they noticed more of a shift from the high claims PPO people moving to HMO, you'll see a higher increase in the HMO rate actually for 2019. So they're really monitoring that trend. The PPO increase was 1.5%. No increase in dental, no increase in life, and the employee assistance program that are also under the Panorama umbrella. Last year was the first year that we had tried to provide high deductible / health reimbursement account, meaning that if employees did not use their deductible, meet their deductible, that we would gain the savings related to that. Well, the contribution rate and the deductible itself, you're penalized if you go to out-of-network providers. So there was concern by those employees that actually utilized the non-network providers that the incentive wasn't there to switch. So for this year, what I'd like to do, we've had two people actually participate in the HMO, which we had another one. And I think it's been very successful as an option for people that, you know, you're more highly involved, I guess, to go through your primary care physician versus going to anybody that you would like in the PPO. So it does take a little getting used to initially, but I think it's been successful for employees. Traditionally, then, we've had the $500 deductible plan, and I would like to, as an incentive, to try and get people who do utilize in-network providers, offer a high deductible $1,250 plan that has an HRA of $1,000. All of it is done through Panorama Health. You know, when it comes to claims, we used to do it a long, long time ago, where we would reimburse the employees for anything over X for a deductible. So it's kind of under that premise. But you really need some incentive to move them off the $500 deductible plan. And in looking at the data, it's a very cryptic claims information, obviously because of HIPAA. But of the 51 covered lives in our group, we had 17 that did not utilize the plan year to date so far, and I think this was as of end of August, at all. We had another 13 that did not have to contribute towards a deductible, meaning they typically would just go for copays, doctor visits, prescription. Another 11 paid, but they did not meet the $500 deductible. So I think there is room that potentially with education, we might move some people over and then actually utilize the savings because we're not paying as high of a premium for the high deductible plan, obviously. So, and there were of the group 8 that did utilize non-PPO providers, so I don't know if we'll ever get a shift in that. We do have several employees that have waived coverage because they're covered either on a spouse's plan or their children still covered on their parents' plan. And then some people that also just have dental only for us. So I think when we look at a comparison to last year, we probably have saved some money because some people have waived that coverage. That can change at any moment, and I want to be careful and that we're always kind of building in a contingency for that. But I think overall, the recommendation from staff would be to still offer the $500 deductible plan as an option. Obviously, the contribution is going to be higher for employees for that. Offer the HMO plan, and there's an incentive because of coverage levels and because of the premium contribution being much lower, we might get people to do that. The more people that can successfully say that they love the HMO, we might get people switching, which would reduce costs as well. And then also do the incentive for a high deductible HRA plan that maybe with the savings and the premium contribution and a $250 savings and deductible, we might get them to switch and see how that HRA actually works. So with Poderma, open enrollment starts at the end of this month already. They do it through November 20th, kind of lie in right before the Thanksgiving holiday, so that December, we are changing third-party administrators, which will mean new ID cards for everybody. It's kind of a cumbersome thing, but there were some savings associated with changing from CoreSource to HealthSmart. And there were some, I think, issues on a experience level that with CoreSource, that I think that was time for a change. I think we've had them for the past 9 years, 10 years almost. So I think from a perspective of employees, I hear pretty good things. I'm trying to get people to come if there are issues. You know, obviously with HIPAA, there's only so much we can do unless they sign a release to help them. But I think overall, it's a good plan. There are resources. There's a wellness benefit related to that where employees can earn up to $400 in incentives to become more healthy. And I think it's been a good overall plan for Poderma. So that would be my recommendation. I just open up to any questions that you might have.
Have questions? Does
it? Does the government still offer the health savings accounts in addition to this?
It's not part of Poderma, so that is not even something that we would offer. No, they do not do HSAs. Okay.
Yes. Makes sense to me. That's very similar to what
happened
in the office
too.
It's nice to get your employees'
choices. Yeah, it's really nice.
You have to now.
Yeah. What? Just curious. What percentage of our full-time employees do not take advantage of our health insurance?
You know what? I think we've been hiring younger staff that are still covered on their parents' coverage.
Oh. For our daycare teachers.
So I think has been in the daycare. Program.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
I have one of those. I have an adult who's working who turned down his health insurance because it was really cheaper to be on our plan. Well,
cheaper
for him for sure. You know, it's just a better plan. So.
Is evaluate because maybe they're covered on their spouse's plan right now.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to have a shift in coverage. So I think that's why during the open enrollment process, you really do want to educate the employees to look at the whole plan and the plan benefits. Yeah. Side by side before they really choose. You know, some of it is a comfort level too. If they've been on their spouse's plan, they're just not going to probably switch.
Right.
That comes into play as well. Mm-hmm. But there are more this year that have waived the coverage.
More that have waived the coverage
in the past,
this year.
Yep.
but it's probably due to that.
And this chart looks like a 8 out of 34 full-time employees don't take
medical
insurance.
So some have taken just dental.
Right.
There's four and four that have waived it altogether, and they're just covered life insurance and employee assistance, which is very, very minimal.
Thank you, Carol.
Sure.
Okay, so we are going to move now to Bobby Collins, Director Bobby Collins, who will give our presentation on the Blake Fund Annual Report.
This summer was the new beach manager who did a great job taking over both the bathing and the boating beach. So tonight we're going to talk about the 2018 Lakefront annual report. We're going to talk about some of the facility improvements, some of the pre-season marketing and marketing throughout the summer and throughout the fall. We're going to highlight some of the changes at the swimming and at the boating beach. We're going to talk about some of the attendance statistics, because that's pretty clear from last year's meeting that there was a need to have a better understanding of those. We're going to look at the financials for both beaches. We're going to analyze the survey results and the feedback, and then we're going to talk about future planning for next year.
Thank you, Bobby. As Bobby said, I'm the new facilities manager, Matt Walker. Some of you I've met, I've had a pleasure of working with. Some of you I've met, I do work at Hepburn, and look forward to working with down the road. Some of the facility improvements that we took care of at the beach this summer, we took care of annual stair and wall replacements. We had new trellis picnic tables, also ADA compliant tables installed down underneath the trellis. We took care of painting the pier railings. We also took care of that tree removal in the block. Over at the boathouse, we built a new boathouse boardwalk. We purchased a new dingo to help with grading on both the north and the south boating, or north and south beaches, and also to assist with the launch of our assistance boats for our camps, from our assistance to our boaters. We also purchased a new Zodiac GoPro assistance boat, so the rigid inflatable boat, which came in very handy and is a great asset in addition to our fleet down on the beach. Our parks department built 66 new kayak and paddleboard racks, as well as 112 new personal lockers on the North Beach. And during the middle of the season, we unfortunately had to install a sanitary line over at North Beach. For our marketing on the beach, we had our traditional marketing efforts, including our spring and summer brochure. We had our summer newsletter, our summer sampler, as well as our park district TVs at the beach. Flyers, our park district website, and a few signage. We signed 24 new signs installed at the beach, either updating old information or giving our patrons new information about the items at the beach. We used our Facebook and Instagram, or our main social media platforms that we use to get the word out about the park district and the park beach. We had email blasts that were sent to all major, sent for all major marketing events. And each page on the Park District website had 33,500 unique visits throughout the months of May to September. So we had some high traffic for them. Staffing and training, staffing levels were consistent with 2017. We had 62 staff members in Region 18, 61 in 2017. All new lifeguards were cross-trained, so that means that they were both lifeguards and when we came across an issue where we were short staffed on one side or the other, we could move staff in order to have coverage. All lifeguards and boat guards attended a minimum of 20 hours of preseason training before the season even started. Any new boat guards had to attend an 18-hour powerboat certification in order to drive any one of our assistant boats out of the water, and of course, at any point during the season. Same thing with our camp counselors for aquatics coaches. They had to have a powerboat certification. All staff is also required to attend a minimum of 4 hours of in-service training per month, and lifeguards were required to have a minimum of 20 minutes of physical training per day, which was checked off by one of the assistant managers of the beach. With regards to our audit, we scored an A from Moderna, which was very good, as well as we scored an A from Moderna. Over on Swing Beach, it was a safety first mentality. I had the pleasure of getting into the young guards' heads, always in around the side of caution. One in doubt, one up. We had the good fortune of not having one jump during the entire summer. So we attribute that to training, to enforcement of rules, and to kids being attentive while on the show. Our point of sale system for revenue collection, again, was used for second summer, or second season up at the halfway house. We had minimal issues with connectivity, so we had one throughout the entire summer where we had issues with credit card machines, but there was no lost revenue because we were able to bring everything in the following day to pay for receipts. Our swim area was the same as last year, but 175 feet long by 50 feet deep into the lake. Water testing was conducted on a daily basis between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Water samples were taken up to the water plant for incubation periods. All results were updated on the phone lines. We did have a number of closures, excessive number of closures during the month of June, which were attributing to the heavy rains that we had and heavy runoffs that we experienced. With regards to rentals, our trellis and our sun shelter rentals, trellis rentals were down and sun shelter rental revenues were down, and we directly related this to the number of bad weather days that we had in the month of June. Over at Boney Beach, as you saw, this is the annual importance of the boat store was down from 2017. Your tribute to this, to the loss of sand spaces that we have on both the north and the south beaches. Rentals of sailboats, kayaks, paddleboards were similar to the trials and such other rentals. On nice weather days, we had plenty of rentals and there was a steady flow. On foul weather days, we didn't have any at all. Sailings and box camps were, again, had a phenomenal year. We had over 283 enrollments as opposed to 138 in 2017. That's attributed to we moved classes from 2 weeks down to 1 week, and we also had the opportunity gives people the flexibility of 1 week of camp as opposed to committing to a 2 week. So plan for vacations or have a third week.
So this, as Matt already said, we have the second year of our POS system, which gave us really great data to look at. Obviously, this is still the second year of having that, so we are constantly looking for trends, but we'll probably want to be watching that pretty closely over the next number of years. We see the top point there. If a person purchased a pass in 2017, if they were a resident, 55% of those people renewed that pass this year. Non-residents was 36%. One person visited the beach 53 times this summer. There was a number of people who visited zero, but there was a number of people up in the 40s and 50s, which is great to see. Looking at passes, the average number of pass visits at the beach this year was 3.56 visits, slightly up from last year. Of our pass visits, 57 were female. And then we also did an analysis on what the average cost to a person who had a pass was. For a resident, that was $8.76. The weighted price, if you were doing the daily fee, was around $6.50. And then the non-resident cost for a visit was $10.94. And the weighted cost, again, was probably around $10 or $11 because children or adult fees. So it's a really interesting statistics to look at. Looking at the sales of passes, this year we offered online renewals. 11% of people who bought passes actually renewed online, 65% came to take it, and 24% did it at the beach. We had 1,558 passes of any type. You can see here on the left is 2018. They were actually lower than 2017. Revenue as well was slightly lower. We did have pretty nasty weather last year, which could contribute to that. But we also upped the additional pass fee this year for both resident and non-resident, which we think may have caused a little decrease in the pass sales there. Below you can see the resident passes. There is a noticeable decrease in the number of passes that residents purchased this year, but I will talk about that in the next slide. You will see that the revenue is slightly down by $1,600. That's there on the passes, but on the daily fee, so somebody who comes in and pays the daily fee, those were up enormously this year, actually by $15,000. You can also see in this chart here, this is 2018 visits versus 2017 visits. And the nice trend here is we're seeing that of all visits to the beach, 34% were residents this year, while it was 29% last year. This year we had over 10,000 residents visits. Last year we had 7,700. So the trend there is that residents use the beach a lot more this summer versus last year. The weather may have something to do with it, but well, from what we can tell is people were paying the daily fee as opposed to maybe getting passes. Overall, financially, Carol talked about it earlier, there was some additional costs that went into the bowling and beach budget this year, including the facility manager's salaries, which happened in the past, and some additional maintenance. We were strong financially this year compared to budget. The daily fees were really strong, but it doesn't look great on the chart just because those fees weren't in there in the previous years. Survey results. Matt, so just briefly talk about those.
So the areas that we noticed in the survey results were the clinics, the beach house and restrooms, and concessions, and parking as well. With regards to the overall satisfaction rate, out of the 95 responses, 86% of respondents had a good or excellent experience on the beach. We're thrilled with that stat. So future planning areas for investigation improvement, reduction of time for transaction at the halfway house. We look to streamline guest pass processing and check-in. We want to explore an online reservation system for our sun shelters, and also want to do an overall assessment of the beach house restrooms, make sure that some of the smaller amenities that we have available are taken care of, so automatic flushing toilets. We want to make sure that there's hooks in both men's and women's bathrooms and the changing areas. Also make sure that our showers are up and running and always functional.
And we open up to any comments or questions.
Can I just ask, if a high percentage of people that came to take off registered, is that because they were giving something away?
Not this year, we didn't. I think they were probably used to it from previous years. And also a lot of people, while they're here for dropping their kids off for programs or after school programs, might just sign up. Or it might be a fitness center inside that they can beach pass. They like that interaction. But yeah, it's a significant amount more than I thought it was, actually. Mm.
Yeah. Compared to online,
well, what's the first year where you could only renew online? You couldn't do new passes because you had to set up a household.
Right.
So we'll keep watching that to see and to make sure that we are looking at the how people can sign up, reduce the barriers as much as possible.
How did the change in lake level impact you this year?
The change in lake level?
Yes.
So it more impacted our marine beach than it did the baby beach. Just by the loss of available space to rent out with the sand. So we were down, I'd say, about around 10 sand spots from years past that we could have rented just to don't have space to put those.
So, you know, that's not to have a reference of the year before. This was a great year from what I saw. Josh, you probably saw as well. It seemed to be a lot better than the previous years when we had the building.
Yeah.
My recollection is that we lost spaces last year.
We did.
This year was sort of, we didn't need anymore. We didn't need anymore.
So if somebody did bring their spot, we can sell their spot to somebody else, what ended up happening, because we weren't sure where we were going to be at.
I would agree. I think, especially with the last year, we had to deal with that pipe right down it, which caused some problems with us being able to smooth out the sand. Now with that moved up and the dingo, we were able to facilitate and had less problems at the boating beach this year, which is nice. But we're still concerned about lake levels and sand erosion, and we continue to work on that sand management group that we are, Bobby and I are very active in. We'll continue to do that, and we're continuing to go for to be a pilot group about dredging and putting sand on our beach. So we're continue with those efforts, so we'll continue to watch that.
Good. That's a sure thing. There will be no more rocks.
Did you ever see that movie Shawshank Redemption where they just walk with us? So we think we'll just put, you know, everybody takes pebbles up when they go, and then we won't have that problem.
I do have one comment or question, which is leading from the previous conversation about academic grants. A lot of the resident feedback that I have on speech, other than positive stuff, which I've largely shared with you in the past, is just feedback about parking and, you know, hey, residents can't get there, and there's so many people from other towns visiting, some of which I, you know, first of all, I want to acknowledge that I know you guys have an issue with parking. And some of that phrasing, I think, is unwarranted. But I wonder if there's anything to do in terms of signage, perhaps, like encouraging people to ride bicycles to the beach. You know, maybe something at the entrance to Lake Front Park. Is, you know, sort of like if you're still walking, you know, could have been here already, have ridden your bike, or maybe, you know, some kind of discount, or even the, you know, first 50 bike riders on a weekend, no fee or something.
And Elisa has been working on some of those.
Yeah, we're working with the village on wayfinding signs. Actually, Erin is part of that too. Exactly what the signs would say is, you know, it's only a 10-minute walk to the beach, not a half mile, because that intimidates some people. But if you say 10 minutes, like, oh, I can do that, and that's a leisurely pace. So we're going to continue those efforts with village, and that will be not only to the beach, but maybe to take a center. You know, that's all about, you know, with the transportation group we're talking about, wayfinding signage. I don't know if we'll do incentives for that, but we will be adding more bicycle racks and things like that, so it'll make it easier for them. There's always that barrier of they have to bring all their stuff with them. You know, but we know a lot of people are being very creative. Like, they have those burpees maybe their kids don't need anymore. They're actually keeping them and putting their stuff in that riding. So we're going to encourage more of that. Maybe if we see someone do that, give that kind of incentive and a shout out on social media and, like, you know, you could do this. But that is the effort we're trying to work on also.
As far as the restrooms, I mean, obviously, if people are using them and they're not participating or whatever, it's not like there's much we can do. But what is our maintenance schedule on that? Like, if we clean, can we help the cleaning, or like, how can we help that issue?
So it's more the weekends are the issue, but pretty much we have somebody on staff from 10 to 7, Saturdays and Sundays, whose whole slowdown is just go back and forth between the two restrooms. The challenge is it's sand that gets everywhere.
It's also capacity.
Yes.
If you were to build a facility like that now, you would need to have probably 15 to 20 stalls available for that size population. So you're taking, you know, 600 to 700 people on a hot day, and you're putting them into a restroom that maybe is sized for 100 people.
Right.
And that's where some of the challenges are, because Bobby's team and Matt's team, they do a great job, but they also get negative feedback when the restroom's closed for cleaning.
That's the biggest obstacle.
You're getting complaints because you're closed, but then you're getting complaints because you need to keep it clean. So it's definitely kind of a never-ending challenge in the sense that, you know, you have bathrooms that are meant for, you know, 8% of the amount of people that are there.
And that is the biggest obstacle, is that no one wants the bathrooms closed down. And to do a good cleaning, you got to close down the bathrooms. And we do have porta potties, but no one really wants to use. I get it. Hot in there, but that will always be an issue. There's little things that we can do. We're looking at, you know, there's some suggestions for more cooks and things like that we can do, but as far as getting rid of the sand and the perception that it's dirty because there's sand in there, will be an ongoing battle.
It's not a resort. It's a public beach.
Yeah. We're very conscious that they can go in there. Yeah, you're right. They can go make sure there's no toilet paper on the ground and stuff. To really get sand out, that takes a whole power washing regimen. And they do a great job about deep cleaning at night. Every night, actually morning before we open, the parks team goes and does a deep cleaning. It's just hard to keep up. And Chris is exactly right. So.
Well, it's also challenging because it's not like a pool where you lock the turn the lights off at the end of the night.
Oh,
beach closes, and then people are down there until public safety is asking them to leave. So,
well, the bathrooms are closed.
Well,
so that's what we're talking about now.
The trash on the beach, the sun shelters, where you can have things looking great at 8 o'clock and come back at 7 in the morning, and it's a disaster.
Yeah. We talked about hooks, and I heard you said that.
Yeah.
To me, feels like, even if you can't keep the ground dry and no sand on it, at least if you have some place to hang your shirt and your chain.
Exactly, that's easier. Yeah, and so it's funny because that's what we like those surveys, because sometimes they come back and we're like, God, why didn't we think of that? So that's what you hope to get from a survey, just the little things that you can do to improve that maybe we didn't, you know, a new set of eyes saw it. So we appreciate those comments.
Did we have a couple days where we were almost at capacity, or it was very, very heavily used?
So our busiest day was Memorial Day.
Which is always a first thing. It's good.
I mean, we didn't close and say there's too many people.
The good and bad part was that the water was really close and nobody was going to. So from a safety point of view, it was a little bit easier. But from a facility point of view, you have 1,400 people using the bathrooms and walking through the facility. So I think my team did a great job and really great test for the third day. And yeah, we survived it.
We don't have.
Some communities did have differential rate on weekends and maybe during the week, and that's part of the approach for managing scarce resources, but I don't think we've reached that.
We have not, because we haven't reached capacity since I've been here.
What was capacity?
You know, I guess you would say
1,400.
I would say if we ever got to 2,000, we'd be afraid. You know, it would be,
2,000?
It would be wall to wall, but, you know, I don't think we're that close to that. So.
I mean, I think that would be mostly non-resident.
Right.
But it'd be like one out of every four residents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so if you look at the report, it was quite interesting, the average number of visits on weekends, 750, I believe, is what it is, by 250 are residents. So we looked at all the averages. When residents visit, versus when non-residents visit, and it's quite different than what we actually might have thought. So it's been 750 people on average day and weekend.
And 250 of those were residents. That's interesting. Okay, that's very interesting. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you for the great summer, Matt and Bobby. It's a really safe summer, so we always like when we get away out of the summer without any major safety. Absolutely. And so they did a great job in training. And that all goes back to training and vigilant training, constant training throughout the summer, not just at the beginning, but throughout the whole summer. So nice job, Matt, in your first year, and Bobby mentoring him.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing for us because we looked through this before. I can't remember that little beach that Dell place. Thank you.
That was not a beach this summer. They lost their beach due to the high water.
Okay, great.
Thanks. I just want to say I have a couple of babysitters that were lifeguards, and they were scared of the
asbestos. Yeah, we like that. That's good. We're good.
All right. If you like the next set of meetings.
Good night, Matt.
They have healthy respect for him.
No, it's a high problem.
You're not their friend.
Seriously, and they said the training was really tough. Mm.
That's what it's supposed to be, right? One of our goals is to provide, we're the first employer for a majority of the kids in this community, and we take our job very seriously to set them up for success later on, right?
Yes, good, very good point.
No cell phones.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
No cell phones and no rolling up your sleeves.
Oh, I know.
We're strict.
Okay, so reports. First business?
Yep, nothing really to add other than we did go through the loss control review for the admin department and get 99.4. So Bobby's beat us. Bobby's the beach beat us.
I'm sorry, but they're all in the 99s. Yeah. So that's pretty darn impressive.
We're not competitive.
Oh, geez.
Okay. I don't think it's safe.
Right facilities?
Okay.
Similar to Carol, we've got the ice rink loss control review coming up this next month, so we're working on that. And then we have budget working really hard on that right now and the winter brochure.
Good. Parks and Rec?
We have the parks loss control review coming up next week. We're working on that right now, so just got piles and piles of binders, they're going through everything. So. That's exciting, just working on fall park projects, baseball, sports fields, getting everything wrapped up.
We have had to shut down the water fountains a little earlier this year based on the really cool temperatures at night. So we're getting down to 32, 33, and we have so many great new water fountains that we don't want to take the risk with them. So we're starting to shut those down this week. So if you hear anything, they're turned off for a reason. Any questions, concerns? Okay.
Erin, marketing and communications.
We're busy with winter, getting into winter for sure.
Oh, winter.
I know.
Oh,
yep.
Already.
It's always that.
Do you have a good picture for the front?
We're debating still.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
I like
all
to keep
right.
it interesting.
Yeah.
I like that.
Not giving it away either. You have to wait to see.
Picture. That's always so much fun.
Okay, safety and wellness. Carol, is that you?
That's
yeah,
both of them.
Coordinators with Chris and I just were finalizing all the loss control review really this year, and we've done a lot of training related to that, so kind of easing into the new year with the training.
And we don't have to do this again for how many years?
They're revamping the evaluation tool, which I believe, Chris, you're serving on the committee to for that, for input, so I think it's would be probably 4 years, maybe five, if they get it.
That's on five.
Yes.
That means we don't slack off, because you have to prove history for 5 years, but the process is very cumbersome.
It's
so.
a big time.
Yeah, yeah.
People have other things going on. Yeah, mm-hmm. Got it. Any questions on any of those reports? Okay, executive director report.
Right. Hopefully, when you walked in, you saw the beautiful benches out front.
Oh my God, are they beautiful?
Yeah. Aren't they gorgeous?
Oh, they're really
they're
nice.
They were working all day because I was here this morning.
They
and
were.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really beautiful.
They're beautiful, aren't they? So it's finished off. Look, we'll get the bike racks installed by the end of the month also.
Yes.
So you'll see our expanded our bike parking, both. Many locations here, so that hopefully that will encourage people to bike. I know already the sidewalk improvement down the side and right to the front has helped tremendously. We see more and more people walking and biking their kids to our locations, so that's already helped. So once we have those bike racks, it'd be great. So that was a great addition. We, as you know, were gold medal finalists, and we have the plaque. So before you leave, we need a picture of all the board members holding the plaque. We are very proud of that accomplishment. While we didn't bring the grand plaque home, again, I have to remind you that we're still only, you know, we're one of four in our under 30,000 population category. So our little town of under 10,000 are competing with much larger communities. Mm-hmm. And so it's something to be very proud of. We are very proud of it. And we told Erin we were not talking about it till next year, because you know how competitive we are. So
we go. Can't talk about it till 2019.
Everybody that has won it usually takes 3 to 4 years to actually to win it, so to do that. So we've also finished up the two-year process of distinguished accreditation. It looks like we do have the points. The one thing we had to do was tonight when you approve that DCFS policy, we had it as a procedure. That's how picky they are. It had to be a policy. So we'll send that on to them. So it looks like we have enough points. We'll get that grand plaque at the IPRA conference during the luncheon. So that's, again, another two-year process. Little did I know when we decided to embark on this, it would fall at the same time as the loss control. So that process we will not have to go through for another 5 years. But this is the first time in our 100-plus history that we have gone for the accreditation. And like I said, we don't have to. That was something that we chose to do just because we want to be leaders in our fields. And really, I like the process. I now serve on the committee, too. For accreditation, I will be a mentor to other park districts and also serve on the judging panel. So that's a five-year commitment for me to be on that committee. I just find it very beneficial. We really went through all of our policies, our procedures, our training, and we really learned a lot about our district and what we're doing really well. In fact, when we were going through the review, they're like, oh, we're stealing that. Which I have done with other agencies, but also what we can do better. So it was a great process overall, and I'd like to thank Jenny and actually the whole admin team, because it's a lot of work pulling us all together. But that last month, Jenny and I put a lot of extra hours in to get it done. So Jenny knows where everything is whenever I ask her for something, so it's very impressive. So we're very excited about that, too, so I put that in there. The legal symposium's coming up, so Chris, Bobby, and I will be going to that this year, and that's, we really go through, they put, IAPD puts on it every year, and they go through a lot of the new legal issues and some of the old ones, and we just, we talk through them, so that's a staple for all of us. So if there's anything else. In our packet is the integrated transition plan that we talked about doing after we passed our ADA transition plan. So this actually maps out for the next 20 or 30 years the items that we're going to try to accomplish in our transition plan. We don't have to take approval tonight because you approve all those in our budget throughout the years. And even with this, this is actually, and we just got this, it's actually ever-changing document because we did a lot of this when we were doing all the new parks, so this already has to be updated. We completed a lot of these items already as we go through the park. So this is a guide for us. We'll keep on updating this, but this kind of gives you an example of what we have to do in the next couple of years and the amount of resources that we have to do. Legally, we have to show that we have. We have to show legally that we are moving towards fixing all these items. So this really does show that we're committed to the improving our ADA accessibility and that we have a plan moving forward. And while we won't again get all this done in a year or two, it'll take about 10 years, we will accomplish that. And things change, and new laws come into effect, as we know, so we'll keep on working on that. But that's in there, too. And I think that's about it. Do you have any other questions?
I see we have to vote on, not that we're not here. Do you need to tell us who the delegates are?
We have to decide who wants to be delegates.
Okay.
And we'll do that one. I also have a request. About every 5 years, Christmas falls on a Tuesday, which is a holiday for the park staff. And so that means Christmas Eve is a Monday. So I would like to request that we give that as an additional holiday for our staff. We don't have to take emotion. I'm able to do it if you. I just want to, kind of the consensus. The board thinks it's a great idea, and we still will still be open on Christmas Eve until about noon, I believe. Correct.
Yeah.
So the fitness center will have part-time staff in here, but it gives full-time another day off. And mm-hmm. with all the hard work they've done this year, I think that's something we should do. So does that seem reasonable, Gregory?
You should. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. And then if anybody would like to go to the IPRA conference. They just put out the brochure. You probably, I don't know if you got an email, not I'll forward it to you, the conference brochure's out. So just email me, let me know if you'd like to attend, and then which days that you'd like to attend. As always, the IAPD meeting is on Saturday at 3:30, and they request that someone be there from our agency. You can elect that I go to that meeting and represent the park district, or if one of you would like to go, that's fine too. You also need a alternate if for some reason I can't make it. I'm sure I couldn't make it because I think I was giving a session that day, so Carol went on my behalf, so I need it. And that could be actually Chris or Bobby are going Saturday, unless you're speaking this year, I'm not sure. You could name one of them if one of you aren't. But a lot of times the sessions on Saturday for commissioners are excellent. Mm. They really, on Saturday, that's when they try to do a lot of the commissioner ones. So I highly encourage you to come if you can on a Saturday.
What are the dates again?
It is
24th, 25th, and 26th.
So 25th and 26th is really the Friday and Saturday. I think Saturdays are really good for commissioners. That's when they seem to really focus a lot of those on. And our attorneys speak at, I think, half of them at that. So,
right.
Get some
and they
legal
give a good,
advice.
Actually, it's a really good talk.
So just think about, let us know. I think we have a couple, like a month to decide for that. But we'd like to do the delegates tonight, if at all possible.
December
12th
is the early bird deadline.
Oh, December 12th is early bird deadline. So I'd have to know where that is, because we like to save money. All right, that's all I have, unless you have something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for yourself?
How about the current status? what month?
Oh, it's going very well. I mean, we're looking at probably end of November to be finished. So it always looks very impressive because you see all the equipment go in, and then this contractor does a little bit different. They do all the equipment in first and then do the infrastructure around it. So we're seeing those put in right now. So it's going really well. So hopefully good weather.
Well, the playground's up. It's probably only 60% done.
Yes.
But
so
when the season, they're like, oh, God, it's done.
Shotgun.
And what about, you know, preparing for like a grand opening? The grass isn't going to be in. I mean, are you concerned about like muddy areas?
No, we have a sidewalk. Yeah. I mean, we'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, there's actually a successful sidewalk.
That,
whole thing,
we're going to have to, with the way the weather is falling this fall, I mean, we're going to have to probably do restoration and then plantings of the tall grass area in the spring. And, you know, we're going to have to carry money that's over in the budget for that. But I don't see any reason why the play space itself will be available through November or December.
Yeah.
Are you planning anything? Or is it?
We will, and that'll be probably a bigger one because it's a bigger park,
yeah.
But we don't know when. It'll be one of those like 2 weeks notice
to try to figure
type things
out.
Because we just don't know. We can't even guess when it'll be done with weather in the fall. You know, we could have a really dry, you know, or it could be really wet, so.
Maybe coordinate it one with the South School and have it after school one day.
That would be a good idea. That's a really good idea, Lisa. I like that idea. I'm writing that one down.
Okay.
Coordinate with South School.
And on behalf of the board, I would like to congratulate Lisa and your staff for the gold medal finalist spot that you had. It was a source of great pride, I am sure, for you, as it should have been. So.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You know, we acknowledge that, and it really represents many things in front of the scenes and behind the scenes that you do. So
thank you. Appreciate that.
If you go for it again, please do it in a year when it's more exciting.
Oh, yes, yes, we do.
So, I don't know.
Indy, we just
and
about did some
scooters and stuff.
Oh, man, that was a tough gig.
Next year's Maryland.
Yeah.
Maryland? Well, that's close to Maryland. We could do that. Yeah, Maryland's okay. Well, it's really Baltimore. Let's be honest here. All right. So if we could move to action items.
All right.
I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 888, Truth and Taxation, as presented.
So second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Mr. Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve the 2019 health insurance recommendation as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve the lowest possible bidder, Core Mechanical Incorporated of Chicago, Illinois, for the Watts RTU HVAC replacement, including the base bid and alternates 1 and 2, for a total of $44,315 as presented. Okay.
You have motion and discussion?
Yeah. We have to have a motion before we discuss.
Second.
Okay.
Discussion.
This is kind of budget.
I'm sorry, what's that?
This within the budget that we plan.
So the budget that we had for the total project was $50,000. So after that, our working construction budget was $41,880 after professional service fees. So we had to bring in engineering for the rooftop unit. So came in a little bit over budget. We asked the board to consider using some of the funds available that were saved in the take it lead paint abatement, so that was budgeted at 145, and that came in at 107. So the reason that we did that is because of the additional cost of going out to bid for the fourth unit next year. So if we were to say go base bid and alternate one, we would have to replace that fourth unit next year. We'd have to have bidding costs, professional service costs, and crane fees again. So we do have to have a crane on site to have these units installed, which is why I asked for that.
So it's about $1,500 over budget, but it would cost us more next year if we waited.
Why was one of the bids, because I saw four in the packet, and one was like triple?
Because I think they were hoping they were going to be the only bid.
I was wondering if it was different brands or equipment.
Typically you have contractors that throw out outrageous bids. We've seen it in some of the playground projects where we've had a bid that's 35% or 40% over the bottom bid. I've never worked with Amber Mechanical, so I wasn't surprised. I can't say, maybe they missed something in their bid. Maybe they actually didn't come out and visit and do the site visit, just looked at it from a Google map and thought, well, I'm going to just throw out this number. And, oftentimes when you have a professional service provider, an engineer, they have a group of contractors they work with, and they'll send out a bid to those contractors. And then those contractors feel beholden to bid on that work because they work with that engineer all the time, and they don't want to put them in the position of not having a bid. Obviously, if that came back as the only bid, we wouldn't recommend that. I mean, that's so far
beyond scope. We would have thrown it out.
We had estimated that this was going to cost around $45,000. Some of the manufacturing costs have gone up from these units based on recent tariffs. So we've seen an increase in some of those costs there that we couldn't really anticipate when we were setting the budget.
How many units? There's four?
I'm sorry,
there's
what?
Four units?
Yes.
There's four units,
were
yes.
They all put in at the same time?
Yes, they were all put in at the 2001 renovation.
And is there a certain brand that they recommend over others?
We actually recommended a like-for-like change-out. So without going too far down the rabbit hole, basically what we're going to do is change the unit with the same unit that's of the same brand, so we don't have to change the roof. Because if we went to a different brand, we'd have to change the roof.
Right. And this won't interfere with any future renovations that we may or may not do at that facility?
I mean, it could if we were going to put a second floor on, or a second and third floor, or, it would really depend on what the scope of that would be. This is really a keeping the lights on type purchase as far as replacing these units.
As far as in our plans are just to renovate that upper level, that would not change it. That would not affect it.
It's not really being considered at this time unless something changes.
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. And anything else, Bob?
No. How long did Christy make this all last? The last ones lasted 18 or 19 years, right?
Yeah. Typically the median lifespan is 15 years. Yeah. So we're past that. Last year we spent in repair costs 65% of the replacement cost of one of the units.
Oh.
So we're looking at needing to get this.
Well, we get an energy.
Engineering to your period. This is, it seems exactly amortized.
Yeah.
So good.
So this is also heating and cooling, so heat, air conditioning.
Do you expect an energy savings, perhaps?
I do. It would be an unaudited number because new units are always going to be more efficient than what was there. Because as the units, they age, they are much less efficient.
Right. Anything else? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bourne?
Yes.
Mr. Kimball?
Yes.
Mr. Levin?
Yes.
Mr. Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Okay, so how do you fill in those red blanks?
I would
there?
Put me first.
Okay.
Because I know for sure I'll be there.
Okay,
and then,
maybe.
Quick, Chris.
Yeah, okay. I entertain a motion to approve Lisa Shepherd and alternate Chris Liner as Glencoe Park District's delegates at the 2019 IAPD annual meeting as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bourne?
Yes.
Mr. Kimball?
Yes.
Mr. Lennon?
Yes.
Mr. Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay, thank you for this, number E. I entertain a motion to approve changing the November regular board meeting to Tuesday, November 13th, 2018, as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bourne?
Yes.
Mr. Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lennon?
Yes.
Mr. Underunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay, is there any other business?
I'm going to be gone January 8th, and we have a meeting that night. I don't know if we can change that, or I can call in as well.
Oh, actually, I was going to, let's see what I was going to do on that one. I was going to see if I could change that, too.
Okay.
Because I have the application, too. And it's a committee meeting, so I don't know if we need to have it, because at that point, we should have everything finalized. Could we just say it's move them the 8th now, and if we need to have it, we'll move it maybe before the board meeting.
So let's cancel the 8th,
yeah,
and then with the expectation that if we need a committee meeting, then we will find another date,
yeah,
for it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that whole week is not good for you. For you?
I'm back the 9th.
You're back the 9th. And
yeah, the whole week's not good.
The whole week's not good.
Yeah.
So we will just find another spot,
yeah,
for it. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, I entertain a motion to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Hey, don't